Can you tell us a bit, since you're mentioning kind of the gulf between the more recent settlers and traditional ways of life, if one tunes into various news sources for the North, you'll notice a lot of the various quote-unquote band council officials, Dene Nation officials in places like the Decho Council, are calling for the construction of the pipeline now. Some of the people who are in these positions of power were some of the most adamantly opposed to the construction of a pipeline only less than 30 years ago. Can you explain this about face, and does that represent larger amounts of people, or is that only amongst the officials?
Yes, it's only amongst the officials that have had a chance or an opportunity to be like colonized in their own minds about what they think is important and how the North is actually going to get out of their problems. The answer is not to pour more money into small communities and think that all of a sudden people are not going to want to do drugs and not going to want to do alcohol. The problem is to treat the problems before we have such development, or else no one's going to benefit from it except the bootleggers and the drug dealers. Actually, I shouldn't say that. The people that actually aren't from the North and come up to work in the wintertime will benefit supremely, because they'll have guaranteed work for 3 to 5 years in which they'll be able to work as much as they want and do whatever, not have to pay a cent, because they'll be living in camps and all that kind of stuff will be catered towards them. But if you want to talk about the leaders, a lot of the leaders that first spoke up about the pipeline and not wanting it back in the Berger Inquiry days were very young. So they were kind of like objective, I guess, about what they saw in their communities. Shortly after that, they started, the federal government started calling them in to like, okay, why don't you run for politics? Why don't you do that? And that kind of stuff, which eventually brought them the Yellowknife and took them away from their communities and what I think is the most important thing, is the people that they're supposed to be representing.
Yeah, if you're not in touch with the people, you're just not in touch. It's
exactly.
As simple as that.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned, obviously, that there's going to be the impact economically if they try to ram through this pipeline. What kind of environmental impact on the traditional lands are we talking about here?
The North is primarily, like, along the pipeline, was primarily composed of permafrost.
Right.
The ground under about 5 to 8 feet is total ice. That ice can shift, can melt, that kind of stuff. They're talking about digging up huge amounts of excavation through this stuff, and they expect a pipeline, something as rigid as a pipeline, to be able to stay strong. If you look at it structurally, it seems like something is amiss, because they have no effect, they have no plan for what happens if the permafrost melts, or what happens if the ground all of a sudden slumps, or all the water comes out of it and becomes dry, dusty soil. They're thinking that the pipeline will be able to coexist with what's going on, and that's not at all possible.
So if this were to be constructed, it wouldn't be just a pipeline then. What kind of other construction would be going on in the 1,700-kilometer-long Mackenzie Valley?
We're looking at clearing a 1-kilometer right-of-way for the pipeline.
Would that include roads and settlements?
Yes, exactly. The roads would be following the pipeline during the construction phase, which they have not said if they're going to decommission after or if they're going to leave in place. But along with that, they're having barge landings along the Mackenzie River, which they hope to float most of their materials to the sites to build the actual project. And when you look at that kind of stuff, so they're clearing a barge landing on the river shore where numerous game cross and is kind of like the lifeline of the people of the Mackenzie Valley, not including how much pollutants they're going to be pouring into the Mackenzie River and expecting it to kind of survive.
Is the Mackenzie River threatened currently, or is it more or less been able to stay clean despite ongoing other development?
It's going through quite a bit of a drought, actually. Water levels have continually gone down, and that's because of the actions in the headwaters of the Mackenzie along the BC-Alberta border.
Right.
Up around Whitecourt and stuff like that, there's numerous pulp and paper mills and dams and all that kind of stuff that weed its way through it. Also on top of that, the oil sands project takes water directly from the Slave River, which is one of the leading tributaries of the Mackenzie River as it flows into Great Bear Lake.
Okay.
And the water there is dropped like 6 to 8 feet. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
No, not at all.
Imperial Oil, or as other people would know it, Esso, has been leading their own environmental impact assessment as to what they think their own pipeline would do.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any problems that you see about this assessment? Because like CARC, for example, that's the Canadian Arctic Resources Committee, have complained about the lack of independence. Do you have anything to say about their proposed assessment review, the one that's currently in the courts?
It is being rushed through. There's a thing talking about meaningful consultation, and they're not following it at all. They're putting the main information sessions not in communities that are going to be directly affected from the pipeline. They're putting it in centers like Yellowknife and Hay River, Norman Wells, when actually the people that live along the pipeline corridor, like in Fort Good Hope or in Tuktoyaktuk, where the huge gathering system is going to be, those people are going to be most affected, and yet they're expecting people to travel into these information sessions on their own dollar to talk about the pipeline and why it's not going to be beneficial. So if you really wanted to hear what people have to say about the pipeline running through their back door, why not go to those people that are going to be most affected? They're putting it in Yellowknife.
Right.
Yellowknife has nothing to do with the pipeline.
So when you're talking about where things are going right now, the Inuit Circumpolar Conference have recently been discussing the impact on the land itself regarding effects of global warming. There's been actually, you might have seen a lot of stories in the papers in just the last few days. What kind of changes have people, either yourself or other members of the DYA, been noticing in the climate and the land, even separate from the proposed pipeline?
I've only been here for a limited amount of time, but when you talk to any of the elders or people that have been on the land for a long time, you can tell that the animals' patterns are changing. What used to be like clockwork, I was explaining to you about when to go to your favorite fishing place or when to go to look for animals in certain areas, it have kind of, the patterns have changed dramatically already. They've been finding problems with the sea ice up in the north, but also on the time that it takes for rivers and ponds to freeze up within the Mackenzie Valley has gone later in the year, which causes problems for those that are hunting and trapping to get out onto the land because they rely on the land being frozen and to be able to walk across those streams or you drive their skidoo and stuff like that across the streams and ponds to get out to their trapping and hunting areas.
The Berger Inquiry that you mentioned before, it was originally proposed that the pipeline itself might be able to go through after, quote-unquote, just land claim settlements were agreed upon with nations that the pipeline would traverse. Mm-hmm. Of those 14 First Nations, 10 of them have already signed on to, quote-unquote, final agreements. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that they're trying to ram through the pipeline ahead of even the slight advantages gained by the Berger Inquiry. How have the various settlements that have been completed been able to affect life, and do you think that they'll all be completed before any proposed pipeline does actually start getting constructed, or are they going to skirt that recommendation as well?
Well, that's actually a pretty good question, because when the first pipeline was actually built, the IPL pipeline in the late 70s, from Norman Wells to Zama in northern Alberta, they received some opposition from the Decho, but the Saw-Too had already finished their land claim or had signed the darts of their land claim, and they were going to be getting royalties from it already. The Decho opposed it, but because they're not a land claim and are governed by the federal government under the Mackenzie Valley Management Act, they did not have a say at the table of actually what was going to happen. So they actually ran that pipeline through without the Decho's support or any of the community kind of saying, yeah, you can do this, and they just did it anyways. So yet again, 30 years later, it's the same thing. The Decho still does not have a final land claim agreement, and they've filed for an injunction to stop the Mackenzie Valley Pipeline before any kind of settlements have been made with in regards to the land claim agreement.
If these land claim settlements were all finalized, would the DYA then drop its opposition, or would they maintain the same?
Oh, no, no. We're standing for something that we all believe in, and that it's up to us to start the change. Without the Mackenzie Valley Pipeline, you know, the Northwest Territories will still exist. And it doesn't need to come part and parcel with us reaching that 20th century, you know, mark and saying, yes, we're civilized now. We're still going to be here because we feel that it's not something that's in our best interest, and it never will be.
Can you explain the connection for Dene peoples that you've met, both elders and others, with the land, even a spiritual level, how that plays out? For me, from what I've been able to learn, it seems like as much a cultural thing as anything else.
Yeah, and, we believe that it was our mother, and from it we came. It nurtures us, it takes care of us, it provides for us. And if you're going to go ahead and go back on thousands and thousands of years of people actually living in coexistence with the land and start destroying that bond that we once shared with Mother Earth, you're looking at something that's going to be like a catastrophe waiting to happen. The lessons that we learn from just going out and doing those things on the land, it's not something that's learned. It's something that's in you, and it's just more rediscovered. And it's not as if you took someone out there and just said, okay, well, how are you going to survive? And they had no idea, you know. Eventually they'd figure it out. It's not that. It's so much as a more of a spiritual thing anymore, but it's kind of like our last rite. People can't tell us what we can do out there. It's up to us, and only we know how to respect it in the proper way and without causing any kind of disruptions or problems. And those are teachings that have been passed on from elder to young person to elder to young person forever.
Well, I'm calling from Montreal, as you know, and I was wondering if you have any suggestions for what people in this city or elsewhere in the urban centers of quote-unquote Canada can do to help prevent the construction of the pipeline or to support the DYA in any other ways.
We have our website, which is www.nayouthalliance.ca. But I guess the message more than anything is during the Berger Inquiry, a lot of the support for the actual inquiry to start up came from the people in southern Canada and from the lobbying that the chiefs and elders did at the time for support for other Canadians to support us in our problems. You know, it's not as if everyone is on board with the pipeline. And I know a lot of the Financial Times and all that kind of stuff think that the Northwest Territories, because of the Aboriginal Pipeline Group, is waiting for all these so-called bandit organizations to join on side and look at the future and what the bright things are going to come from this Mackenzie Valley Pipeline when, you know, we kind of have our own problems to deal with first. And those problems aren't going to get better with the Mackenzie Valley Pipeline.
Are there other movements that you or other people on the DYA have seen that are going on around the world that you see as having a lot in common with the struggles of the Dene people?
Yeah, I would just look at South America there in Venezuela. I haven't been able to keep too much up to date, but it sounds like our own Canadian companies are doing the things that Imperial is trying to do to us and Canada and that kind of stuff, processing oil fields and not even caring about people that live in third world countries.
Are you talking about corporations operating in South America?
Yes.
Okay.
In Canada in particular.
Just one final thing. If you could tell people anything else that you would like them to know about this ongoing project. One of the things that I want to talk about with others is the opening of the Northwest Passage due to global warming is being treated as an economic boom by both Imperial Oil and all sorts of shipping lanes, right? So this is going to be a lot of attention focused on the north very soon. The pipeline will be meeting up with Tuktoyaktuk, which would be theoretically the hub of the start of the Northwest Passage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is just only going to get bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Anything else that you would want people to know about?
Yeah, actually, I think the hub for the Northwest Passage would kind of be Bathurst Inlet. It's just directly north of Yellowknife.
Okay.
It's actually where I think a lot of shipping companies would be looking at just because of the impact of having, well, there's two operating Diamond Mines 9 now with a third scheduled to come online within the next couple of years.
Right.
And they're proposing to build an all-weather road from those three Diamond Mines up to Bathurst Inlet. And it would give them a cheap alternative. Instead of flying everything in, they'd be able to ship it in and then drive it up on the road.
So this would be similar to the Dempster Highway in that it just traverses the whole land?
Yes, exactly.
So it's a similar project to the pipeline in a way?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's not getting a lot of people being able to speak about it because everyone kind of views that the diamond mines are good for some reason when they leave huge craters in the earth.
Right.
Yeah, not to mention just the environmental degradation that's happened. If you look at some of the work that the Canadian Arctic Resource Committee has done, they've shown the huge footprints that are left just from these exploration camps running all over the north, I guess north of Yellowknife, through the Bathurst Inlet, and they've staked everything. And there's no actual regulations about what they can leave and what they can burn and all that kind of stuff. And it's just kind of people running wild and hoping that they'll strike it rich by hitting a kimberlite pipe.
Well, thank you so very much for being able to do this interview. I know that you had to get into a car and bust over to your office there.
Yeah.
So this is much appreciated.
No problem.